of the order is basically putting the IPS facilities in what's called lockdown mode. Lockdown mode meaning no lawyer visits, no external party would enter the facilities, cutting down electricity and water, which led to, you know, a spike in diseases that came from unhygienic conditions. Very little to almost no medical treatment to people inside, to detainees. All of these changes have led to almost 60 detainees dying in the IPS custody since October 7th. This is a crazy number because it's the usual numbers of people dying in the IPS is one person every year, and that's usually a person who has been very sick for a lot of time. But right now, people who are already suffer from illness or disease are not being treated, and they die in prison. Another factor is a very violent wave from the prison guards that we know at least three of the people that were our beneficiaries died from violent attacks of the prison guards. we know that because in the exchange deal that happened, and the people and the detainees that were released, some of them have witnessed such attack. So they told us with the name of the prisoner, and they told us that they were beaten for a very long period of time. They told us that they were screaming for a long period of time and haven't received medical treatment, and after more than 7 hours they just died. One of the cases, a volunteer physician of PHR could actually enter the autopsy, and he basically said that the prisoner could not be identified because of the brutal violent attack. He obviously was subject to. Yes, that's a lot.
2 days ago, a report came out that Dr. Adnan Albush, who was the head of the orthopedic department in Al-Shifa Hospital and has been abducted, I'm not sure when exactly, from Al-Shifa Hospital, and skimming through social media, you hear a lot that they deliberately target medical staff, mm-hmm. and detain and mm-hmm. torture and kill medical staff.
Yes. First of all, yes, the news about Dr. Albush is really horrifying. And the way it was, the way it happened is also so inhumane that, you know, he was abducted in December, and we know that He has been dead since the start of April, and he was brought to the Gazan border 2 days ago. Very horrible story, you know. The Israeli narrative says that medical staff that has been taken into, that has been arrested, it is because their complicity in, you know, giving shelter to Hamas combatants, and, you know, giving place to, with all the story about al-Shifa and the Hamas commander center and all of that, we know that it's, sorry about the word, it's bullshit, because the targeting of the medical system, the healthcare system, is not only by the staff themselves, it's by the infrastructure, by attacking hospitals, by attacking ambulances, by attacking, you know, alternative medical facilities that have been built to give answer to the lack of space in the hospitals. We also know that by testimonies of doctors saying, you know, Dr. Ghassan Abu Sinni Sitti, a Gazan surgeon from Al-Shifa Hospital, who is now in the UK, he would describe how surgeons who would work in hospitals and go back to their homes, their homes would be attacked the minute they enter the house. And so a lot of indicators show that it's not, you know, it's not a coincidence. It's not like a random targeting of a random place. There is a targeting of the healthcare system system, because they know that it's a vital component of life, and it's a vital component of continuity. Yeah, providing treatment and providing assistance and saving people from death, and, you know, giving a chance to life in that place. So yeah, the targeting of medical staff have been documented in our reports. We see that a huge number of medical staff were taken from hospitals during their shifts, during their work. They have been terrorized for being doctors, for providing medical care, and yeah, I think it leaves no doubt why this is the sector that they are picking, and it leaves no doubt that this is the way that they are dealing with these prisoners, imposing such hard, such terrorizing conditions on them. Leaves no doubt for what is the goal of this strategy. Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more regarding your work. So the number of Palestinians imprisoned in Israeli detention has doubled since October 7, but it has already increased a lot in 2023, before October happened. In your report, it's also written that actually the laws have changed a lot since the new government, since 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that has made your work a lot more difficult already before October 7th. Could you maybe elaborate a little bit how it changed since 2022 and then how it changed again since October?
The rise in the number of arrests and people held in detention has a lot to do with the change of the government and Itamar Ben-Gvir, the new Ministry of Interior Security, of him getting into this position. There was, you know, almost official stance on allowing police brutality during demonstration, during raids in Palestinian villages and the West Bank, in, you know, arrests of over-incitement. There has been like given a green line, a green light of needing less reasons and less justifications for arrests, and also for not fulfilling the duties and obligations during these arrests. It's, you know, it's part of a very like out there in your face way of I don't know how, what is the gentle way to describe it, but it's like it's fascism 101 without any doubt that has started even before October 7th. We feel it, and the responsiveness that we or our lack of responsiveness that we see from the IPS, from government offices that we usually communicate with regarding our beneficiaries. Whereas once we would have, you know, continuous communication, even when the conditions are bad, even when the rights are not being, you know, granted, we would still have like a ongoing communication. They would answer our letters. We would have an answer to know what we can build upon and, you know, plan our strategy forward. And this has stopped being the case before October 7th. And since October 7th, it was like very, you know, frustrating to know that there is so little that you can do, and there is so much going on, and the only way that we found some sort of a you know, receptive ear is by talking to the international community, because on the national level, you would find no one that is willing to answer your questions, hear your concerns, do anything about it. Not even, you know, media, not even Knesset members who were once like a little bit, you know, interested, not in the Palestinian context, but in prisoners' rights in general. And it went on and it got less and less till we, you know, faced a total blackout of communication.
So you don't have access to prisons anymore at all?
We have, it's not precise to say at all. There was, I think, one or two cases where we proceeded to a court appeal to the High Court of Justice, and the court ordered the IPS to give us a reason why the lawyer can't visit. And in one case only, he did enter. Yeah.
Can I ask a
sure,
question?
Of course.
Does it depend sort of on the on the person inside the IPS system, on their like personal? I want to say.
Understand. Can you speak louder?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Does it depend on the personal stance or will of the person inside the IPS that you have contact with? How? I don't say, I don't know, forthcoming they are towards your letters and appeals, and has maybe have like repercussions for them inside the system also changed in their, if they have contact or if they are accommodating to your.
In the usual contact? Situation, that is something that like, the communication definitely depends on the person itself. And But since October 7th, it is clear for us, without you know being presented with a official directive or regulation, but we assume that there was an official directive imposed upon them to be violent and to not be not give information, not be responsive to such requests.
In your report, it's also written that in the public opinion, and also some Knesset members said that they actually believe that Palestinian prisoners or detainees live in hotel-like conditions.
Yeah.
Is that actually the public opinion? Many.
It's a. When you repeat something enough times, it becomes like the it gets like wider and wider acceptance among the population. I don't think the Israeli public knows anything about the conditions which Palestinians live in, but they do have a tendency to feel that we give them too much. Never, doesn't matter on what, like on land, on buildings, on rights, everything. We give them too much. We should not be as generous as we are, and so. This has been a very repeated, theme in Itamar Ben-Gurion and Smotrich, two of the like very extremist right-wing fascist parties, that they live in a very, very good conditions. They eat hamburgers. They talk about. In order to, you know, further demonize them, further strengthen the voice that would support actions and regulation that would limit further their rights, their basic human rights. And this is something that has found a very receptive grounds ever since the 7th of October, because people who weren't very interested in Palestinian detainees before that now feel from a place of, from a place of vengeance, from a place of I think also pain, that they feel that we should hit them harder and you know, show them that they can't mess with us anymore.
Okay, who exactly do you work with, and how do you choose the people that you take on as cases and that you represent legally, that you help to get access to medication? How?
From the detainees community. Every person needing medical care, be it, we have Israelis, Palestinians, citizens of Israel, and Palestinians from the West Bank and from Gaza. Whoever you know, reaches us and need our intervention, we provide. Basically, the interventions are medical. We don't do, you know, normal legal representation about other stuff. But prisoners who suffer from chronic illnesses are not, and not giving medication or not being checked as frequently as they should. We also have, you know, we have some sort of an assessment process of identifying trends inside the prison system. So one of these trends that we identified recently was that prisoners with a ADHD are not being treated with medicine, instead are being put in solitary confinement. A lot of times, a lot of detainees with mental health issues are also treated that way, being held in solitary confinement. And these are trends that we react to them by, you know, first communicating our asks and needs to the relevant ministries and offices, and also by you know, conducting research on different ways that we can offer an alternative to the IPS. But yeah, to your question, every detainee who has a health issue, we provide assistance to.
And so right now that the communication is almost completely cut down, mm-hmm. how is it possible for them to reach you? Is it more the families right now who are contacting
it's family,
you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sorry. Okay, and maybe just to go back again to how grave the situation is, we have seen a lot of videos and pictures coming out, I think in January, where a lot of detainees were cuffed by hand and feet. We also saw pictures where there were numbers on that. What does that mean, and what is happening there?
We know that this practice is now being very, you know, present. The ongoing handcuff in the hands and legs for a very long period of time. We know that it resulted in a lot of injuries of detainees. We receive information from whistleblower doctors who work in Sidi Tayman and who were in contact with Gazan detainees, and without with the securing their confidentiality, we receive like information about the situation they see the detainees in, and they describe a very concerning situation. A lot of them would be in such bad condition that they had to go through an amputation of one or two of them, their legs. A lot of them report very extreme levels of pain from being held like that for a long period of time, and I think it's a combination of two things. One is the initial intent of humiliating or terrorizing the detainees, and the other one is not caring enough to stop their suffering, or not caring enough to acknowledge their rights to not be handcuffed the entire time that they're under custody. يا طالع عين عين للجبل يا مول للمقيدين النار بين لليامان يا مان عين للهنا يا روح ما بدي منك لكم خلعة ولا لا 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 بدي زنار بين لليامان يا مان عين للهنا يا روح إلا
tasted freedom. Soon those hellish skies turn to blue and starry nights as our voices start to rise. We're ending an apartheid. Yeah.
Radio Lora 97,5 MHz.